This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we're going to be talking with Michael Mode, who is a name with whom you may not be very familiar, but we'll talk a little bit about his background as we get into this podcast. But one thing perhaps you might know about him, that is he's the one who had come out with the different colored napkins for the napkin to rose effect. So if you've had those kinds of napkins where they're green on one side and red on the other, or yellow or purple, he is the one who had come up with that. Also, he had a joke app that he had done with Jeff Hobson several years ago and has since turned that into a book, which he's going to be offering both those things as prizes to some of lucky winners who will be entering the contest, if you want to enter the contest. It'll be available. I'll talk more about this on the back end of the podcast, but basically he's going to give away two prizes, which will be three packages each of different colored roses, or the same color if you wish, and also a copy of his book, which is called Best Jokes Ever, Professionally Tested Jokes for People Who Want to Be Funny. And it was by Jeff Hobson and Michael Mode. Anyhow, very funny book, and we'll talk more about that again on the backside. Well, this week's podcast was recorded while we were in Cullen, Michigan at the 86th Abbott's get-together, and he has been attending this for a long number of years and has been instrumental in putting together some of the shows with the Amish, where we've gone over to their homes on their farms, and it's just been a lot of fun. We talk a little bit about that as well. Plus, he is somebody who has worked a lot of trade shows in his younger days, and because he's from the Detroit area, has specialized in the automotive field. A lot of really good advice that he gives here this week in the podcast. I know you're going to enjoy it, so please welcome my friend this week, Mr. Michael Mode, here on The Magic Word. Hi, I'm today with another longtime friend, and we're actually recording this while we are in Cullen, Michigan at the Abbott's 86th get-together and 90th birthday. Not sure how those two misalign, but nevertheless, we'll find out later as we get into the week. But the important thing is getting a chance then to speak with someone that you have heard on the podcast from time to time, because I often stick a microphone in his face and during the convention and ask about what he's up to and what's going on, because he's the one who puts together the Amish dinners that we have had here in the past, where we've entertained a lot of the Amish family. The kids and everything's been great. And also, he has developed a great program many years ago, back in the early days of the iPod, that was a comedy app. We'll talk about that with Jeff Hobson. And then also had developed the, you might best know this guy as being the one who had given us the napkin flower that has different colors and everything. We'll get into that. So a little bit there about his background: from Michigan, formerly from Detroit, now in Gross Point. Perhaps you've seen the movie Gross Point or not. Anyhow, here's my friend Michael Mode. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
It is a good morning.
Yeah, we're looking at the lake and it's a beautiful day here.
Life is good. But kind of looking out that way, everything is fantastic. Now, you've been coming then, we were talking about Abbott's over here for a very long time, and you've met a lot of your magic friends, I guess, through here that have been lifelong companions. And this is the only convention really you attend, I guess.
Yeah, I do. I started coming here, my mom brought me, I was just a kid. It was 1987, so it was the 50th get-together. And this is the 86th get together. Mm-hmm. So you can do the math. I think it's what, 36 years, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is, the family reunion you want to come to, as they say.
And we were saying earlier about you had met Franz Ferrari here.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sure. I've got a picture of me and Franz in the back of the Legion. And, you know, back then he was one of my heroes. Today, he's one of my closest friends.
Yeah. Isn't that cool how life works like that sometimes?
I think being in the magic world, it's very unique. I don't think those types of friendships happen very often in other industries. You know, I don't think that happens with musicians and stuff. It does a little bit, but I think it's more frequent. And it's more frequent that it happens here at Abbott's and in Cullen, because during the convention, during the get-together, it's not like you're in a big city where you, after the show, you've got your choice of 30 restaurants and different casinos to go to.
Mm-hmm.
After the show, everybody goes to the Legion.
Right.
Everybody goes to Five Star Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're hanging out. And that's where you get to become friends with these people.
That's true. When you go to a larger convention, people can fan out across the city in different places and you may never see people. But there are just not even a handful.
Yeah.
There are only two or three places you can go.
Sure.
I mean, with a city like this with only one stoplight, you know.
Years ago, I grew up in Detroit and I was good friends with Jason Burns, still am.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were teenagers, we'd come to Abbott's. And
did you work with Doves also back then? I mean, like
I
Jason
didn't,
did? You didn't
no.
get, what, how'd that diverge? Was he doing Doves back then even?
I had a rabbit for one show.
What? Okay. Would he bite you and said, that's it, or what?
No, he kept eating, and he got too big for the... for the. It was a Grant, UF Grant, Mac... bunny box.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he was getting too big for the secret compartment, let's say. And mm-hmm. The show was getting close and he just kept getting bigger. And he fit for the show. And then he appeared and it was a backdoor birthday party. It's a long time ago. And he appears and then the family dog is at the sliding door barking, you know, because he had smelled the rabbit from when I got there. And
yeah.
Kind of ruined the surprise because the dog was just going nuts. Like, there's something in there, I know.
And, yeah.
You know, the dad's like, well, what? Why is he barking at your butt? I go, I don't know. Maybe he likes balloons or something. And when the rabbit appeared, the dog's like, I told you so. And he's jumping at the gate. So
that's funny.
That was the first and last appearance of the rabbit.
You remember
but
what
he lived
name
a
was?
Good life. Uno.
Uno. Okay.
He had a number one on his back.
Like so that was the one and only and the last.
Yeah. <Okay. laughs> Fittingly named, I guess. But back to the story. So I didn't perform Doves. It was me and John Pullum and another guy, Scott Rawlings from Canada, and Jason Byrne. And Jason was the dove worker, you know, and he was a skilled dove worker. He was really good.
At what age? 17-ish?
Yeah, even before then.
Hmm.
You know, 15,
where'd you guys
16?
Work back then? I mean, high school parties? I mean...
Yeah, he was doing shows like that and,
okay.
You know, banquets and
okay.
and things. But we would hang out and work on our shows. And I was doing more of the comedy, magic, and...
You were always a talking act.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we were here one year and we were backstage behind the, helping out with the show.
How'd you know about this to begin with? It's about this convention, about Abbott's.
Yeah, so...
That's another story. Okay.
We've got a lot to talk about. Yeah, so I was working at a magic shop in just outside of Detroit called Romig Magic, and that was owned by another good friend, Mike Foydell, retired Detroit firefighter. And I was too young to drive, so Mike would meet my mom and I halfway, and then he would drive me to the shop.
Okay.
And then... You know, on the way home, he'd drop me off at the Wendy's and my mom would pick me up and drive me home.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's all along the way, there have been people who have gone out of their way to be kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you have had that happen to you in the magic community
right.
as well. And, you know, I'm very grateful for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave me that opportunity. I got to work in the magic shop, got to meet people like Hobson and another guy, Ron Aldrich, who became a mentor of mine, Ronnie C., Jim Oakley. Was a juggler because I juggled as well. So hanging out with all those guys, learning from the magic shop. And then someone mentioned the Abbott's get together.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Abbott's catalog number 22.
Okay.
That was my book of dreams. So the get together had already passed for that year. It was later in August. So the next summer, my mom said, well, let's go. And we came here.
Hmm.
And it was unbelievable. I mean, that just changed my life.
Everything that you dreamt it would be.
Yeah.
And they started meeting people. So, okay, that's how you got here. Now go back.
Yeah, that's
story.
How we got here. Well, and then that first year, we went to the show, and I remember sitting on my close-up case so I could see over the heads of people.
That's funny.
And seeing Blackstone and just Carol Fox and Jay Marshall.
Yeah, legends.
Legends.
Mm-hmm.
And... That was the year they honored Neil Foster. So
wow.
he performed. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. Him seeing him do the zombie and everything. And then my mom was here with another friend, and then they took me back to the hotel. We stayed at a hotel back then. Didn't know about renting local houses.
Sure.
And
because the closest place is what, Sturgis or Clearwater?
Cold water,
which is like about 15 miles each direction.
Yeah,
so.
That's about a half an hour.
So it's not easy to get
no,
to the front.
No, I mean, we're in, for people who haven't been to Cullen, we're in the middle of cornfields here.
Yeah. They said, we're looking out on a lake right now, and that's one of the reasons that people come here, I guess, from Chicago, just kind of for the weekends, and they rent these places to play on the lake.
It's beautiful. It's like the kind of the field of dreams of magic conventions. Right. Like, if you plan it, they will come, and we just appear every year in the middle of these cornfields with Amish people and have an amazing show. But my mom went to the Legion the first night when I was back at the hotel, you know, and it was
by herself.
It was a bar with her friend.
Okay.
And, you know, I was 12 or 13 and I wasn't old enough to go to a bar. So she comes back, and when I wake up the next morning, she said, I've got to take you to this place tomorrow night. And I said, where is it? And she said, it's the American Legion bar. And I said, well, I can't go. So long story short, after the show that night, we walk in and, oh my gosh, this was incredible. It was everybody from the show was there hanging out at the bar. And when I say bar, it's an American Legion.
You're sitting across the table from each
other. Sitting across the table.
Yeah. These long
you're eating a cheeseburger, grilled cheese, French fries. And that just was amazing to me that the pool tables were covered up and people were doing close-up magic. And it, I mean, that was just...
And you thought, this is the real convention right here.
I'm like, I want to live here.
Yeah.
This is the best.
That's when this became home to you.
Yeah. So back to the story about Jason Byrne. So it was one night after the show, Brett Daniels had performed his famous levitation, the water levitation. And, you know, we were kind of helping him tech that and everything. And then after the show, he didn't know who we were. Didn't know Jason really. So he's walking over to the pizza place in town to get some pizza. And I said to Jason, I said, you know, he's with his dancers and assistants. I said, why don't we go, you know, say hi to Brett? And he goes, no, let's not. No. And I said, come on, what do we have to lose? You know?
That's the way I look at it. What do you got to lose?
He might say no.
What are they going to say, but no? It's just going to hurt your feelings, but you can get over that.
Right. So I went over and I said, hey, how you doing? He goes, you guys want to join us for some pizza?
So he asked you guys.
He asked us. So now we're just on cloud nine. Jason and I are just like elbowing each other. We can't believe this is happening. So we go in, we sit down. And during the, you know, while we're eating the pizza, I said, have you ever, you know, trained anybody or coached them?
And he says, mentored or whatever.
Yeah, mentored. Yeah. And he said, no, not, you know, with the birds. And he said, no, why do you have someone in mind? I said, well, the guy next to me.
Yeah.
And Jason's kicking me under the table.
He said, no, don't ask.
And he says, well, yeah, you know, send me a videotape, you know, back in the days of VHS. And he said, we'll see what happens. And then Jason did and ended up going and living with him for a couple months and learning from him. And, you know, Jason was already amazing. And then that just took it to another level. And, you know, there's just so many stories like that that come out of this town. So
that people are so congenial and friendly at this convention, then you have a chance to rub elbows with them, really, and take time. So that's true.
Yeah. I mean, on the bill this week, we've got Matt King and Lance Burton and
David Williamson. Piff the Magic Dragon.
I know Williamson got his start here. He came down when he was a kid. The Evisons are amazing.
Yeah. It's quite a lineup they've got for just a little town like this. That's why it's the magic capital.
Yeah.
The way that it is. Well, you had, during that time, then also started developing, again, your own character and everything. I was going to ask you about trade shows, because you have done a ton of car shows, being in Detroit. How did you first get aligned with them? And what kind of a contract do you use? But let's get, first of all, how did you get aligned with the...
So I auditioned at a local agency, and I did one season for Toyota.
Okay.
And being from Detroit, you know, a lot of the car companies are located there, and that's where the agencies that work with these car companies are. So it was myself and John Pullum, and we did a show together, and we had this whole thing, and I wrote a few different scripts, but one was called Smoke, Mirrors, and Camry Tricks, Camry, like the Toyota Camry. So we had all these different things. I had Toyota written mirror symmetrical and then vertically mirror symmetrical so it would reflect, and it was a perfect reflection of who you are. It was cool. So we did that for a season. And then, typical of the auto industry, someone new came in, a new client for Toyota, and they changed everything. So another friend, Doug Shear.
Yeah.
Who, great, you know?
Kid show magician.
Yeah. Amazing kid show guy.
Is he from Michigan?
He is.
I thought he was from Chicago area.
Yeah, he's from Michigan. He's got some great shows.
There are a lot of great magicians here in Michigan.
Tons.
Yeah. I don't think people realize about how many good magicians have come out of here.
Jeff Hobson, Amazing Jonathan, you know, Harry Blackstone Jr. grew up here. Mm-hmm. Milt Court, Mark Kornhauser. That's one that most people don't know. Carol Fox. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Mark Kalin? Wasn't he from
Mark
here?
Kalin was from California.
He was from California? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a ton. Larry Jennings spent a lot of time in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Klusch.
So when they came, the new person came in and kind of wanted to take in a different direction.
So Doug Shear was working for Chevrolet already. He was performing at the auto shows. And the history of magic at the auto shows goes all the way back to Carol Fox. Mm-hmm. And he was performing there. And then
he was one of the first people, if not the first person, to break magic into trade shows.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
Yep. And from what I heard was just incredible, right? You wouldn't expect anything less from him. And then he had Johnny Thompson doing some of them. And,
right.
You know, there were others along the way. Mark Sweet, John Stetson, those guys did them. So Doug said, you know, we're going to be growing this show here. You know, I think you should audition. So I auditioned. And
how do you audition for a trade show?
You know, there's the auto show clients there from the companies and from the agency. And they're in a room and you come in and you've...
The agency, you mean like an ad agency?
Yeah.
Okay.
Advertising agency. So then a talent agency, you know, someone who would book models and different things like that.
Sure.
So they come in and you do a trick and they basically want to see your personality.
And, of course.
You know, what you can do and what you can say.
Right.
So I fooled them and got the gig. So that led to 10 years of performing at auto shows all over the country.
Wow. And did they ever take you overseas or always just coast to coast?
It was always in the U.S.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a different group that handles the overseas ones.
And did you work with, what you were talking about, models that the agencies, talent agencies handled also. Did you have those kind of models where they were showing the car, you would talk about it or something? Or,
sure.
Or did you just do magic? And
yeah, over the years, they went from being called models to product specialists.
Okay.
And they knew, and rightfully so, because they knew a ton about the vehicle. So they would be up there on the platform.
Because they talked also. They pitched the thing just like a trade show magician.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They knew way more about the vehicles than I did. I knew my show and the information that we were conveying during that show.
Yeah.
They knew all about them. Funny story. One year I was working for, it was one of the first years, and I was performing a Bill and Lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the big closing effect. So I'm up there next to a brand new Trailblazer, Chevy Trailblazer. And I'm on the stage. And at the end of the routine, over the mic, I loudly say, "Inside this lemon."
Ooh. Oops.
Not the best choice of words to...
Did they talk to you afterwards?
To say about a brand new vehicle. As I was saying it, I realized... that's not good because everybody's heads turned.
Yes. <You know? laughs>
So in between shows, I ran out and I bought oranges and then it became Bill and Orange and I still do it to that way to this
Isn't
day.
Isn't that funny? Wow.
But I was doing, we were doing 8 shows a day
mm-hmm.
and I would do about 500 shows a year.
Wow.
It would kick off in October and at the Dallas
State
Fair.
That was your only job, I guess.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Texas State Fair is where it would kick off, where you're from.
And mm-hmm. then, in Dallas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then keep going from there. And it was a blast.
And we were talking earlier about associating with magicians, about how friendly everybody is. When you're in a town, this is the only business that back in those days, you can look in the yellow pages and call up somebody. As you travel, did you care to hang out with other magicians or did some come to you or did you look them up or did you just go back to your room?
Sure. Yeah. I didn't really seek people out too much. I would go to the local magic shop if I had time or something mm-hmm. like that. But yeah, we would hang out. When I was in Washington, D.C. once, I performed, it was like the first day, and someone comes up to me and says, "There's a magician who saw you perform and he'd like to meet you." And I said, "Well, who's that?" They said, "Scotty York."
Hmm.
And I said, you know, I had heard of Scotty York. I definitely, you know.
Yeah.
Legendary. I said, "Well, where is he?" And they said, "He's out in the lobby." So I go out there and I'm looking for a table where he's performing.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it. And it turns out, I didn't know, I'm sure you do, he worked for like the transportation safety division. So he was at a table passing out pencils and talking about, you know, his day job.
Okay.
But what a nice guy. I mean, we went to dinner that night, talked, and then met again the next night, and he exchanged a bunch of information with me and shared a lot of stuff. And I mean, things like that. That was one of the perks of the job, of being able to travel and see all these different magicians.
Right. And so that lasted for about 10 years. And then how did that end? Did they say we're going a different direction, or
a new client.
Yep. Here you go.
And the new client changes things just to change them so that they can show it's different for what they do.
Right.
So, but you know, in their defense, it was probably time for them to phase into something different. Mm-hmm. You know, times had been changing, and it was, I mean, they were ready for something new, and so was I. You know, after 10 years, Billy Mays, the old, you know, infomercial guy, he used to work car shows and trade shows selling his ShamWow, and he summed it up the best I've ever heard anyone explain it. He said, you work 10 hours and five, and, you know, you don't have any weekends, don't have any holidays. And then he said, it's a hard way to make an easy living.
Hard way to make an easy living.
And that's it. You know, it was easy work, but you were gone all the time. Sure. So I was ready to be home. I had gotten a dog, and I'm like, I miss, you know, being away from the dog. And then
my friend Charlie McFarlane is a trade show magician and has been for a long number of years, and had a nice group of clients like Bell Helicopter and Schlumberger and several others, such that he also was a pilot for Continental, I guess later United. He was saying that between the two, he was home less than 30 nights a year to be with his wife and family.
Yeah.
And he started thinking, man, what's more important here? And he started making some other priorities and some changes and everything. But going back to when you were saying, sometimes the client comes in and says, because they want to make a mark, they have a different direction.
Sure.
And that happened several times with the clients he'd had, but the way he kept them, at least as I recall, that worked for him, was that he would work with them and say, let me help you work in that particular direction. So it got to, like with Schlumberger, he was no longer doing magic, but he was the person who would stop people and saying, hey, you need to go in here. And then he would be the one who would do the pitches. He would do some of the talk.
Sure.
And sometimes he was nothing more than just saying, hey, come in here, listen to this guy. Because over the past 10 years, just like with you, people recognize you and they'll come back and say, hey, Michael, good to see you again. And you doing anything? What are you doing this year? Well, we're talking about our new product. And so you're not doing anything other than goodwill ambassador, because you have been that face of the company for so long that you are changing roles. So he's just come back to the company saying, look at this a little bit differently. You can still employ me and use me. Same price. I'm not doing any magic, but I'm bringing in the same number of people.
Yeah, totally true. I mean, that I remember many of the cities that we did, there would be people waiting for the show, and they'd bring back their kids or their wife or their husband and say, you know, we were hoping you were going to be here again this year.
That's great.
You know, and people asking about it.
So, yeah. Did other car companies want to try and get you away from them? I mean, when you were at a booth and somebody...
Yeah, they did. You know, I would shoot some time-lapse video and stuff and show the crowd building, you know, from nobody. And then you would see all the people coming, and it would, you know, there'd be 100, 150 people around the stage. And with all the other exhibits empty.
Yeah.
It was powerful. That's, you know, part of what helped us keep it for 10 years.
What did you do to get the audience engaged to begin with, to get those first 5 or 10 people to stop?
So I did some interactive things. We wrote several different shows. Every year it was a new show that I wrote and put together, but did interactive effects with a TV screen.
Oh, yeah.
And this was in the early days, like even before the iPad turned the TV vertically and had it look like an iPad.
Okay.
And so one year I had popcorn popping in the TV, and then I'd reach in and scoop out a box of popcorn and give it away to somebody. There would be money, like a slot machine, so everybody would hear the slot machine sound. And who doesn't look when you hear the bells from a slot machine?
You look around, wait, somebody won?
Someone's winning millions. So they'd see all these dollar bills falling and filling up the screen of the TV.
Yeah.
And then I'd reach in and take one out, and people are like, what the heck is it? And then I'd say, we're going to be giving away some money. I'd turn the $1 bill into $100.
Yeah.
$100 bill switch. And then, you know, I'd say we're going to give away some money in the beginning. But what happened was I would borrow a 20 from a guy. in the beginning of the show.
So he was literally invested.
He was invested, but then as the crowd grew,
yeah,
they kept hearing about us giving away money. And then at the end,
when you would hand him a 20,
that guy won his 20 out of three bags.
Yeah.
And to most of the people, it looked like we gave away $20 to this guy. Everybody else rolled their eyes because they realized it was just part of the effect.
Yeah, it's funny. That's excellent. I like that. Because they're going to say, hey, you're going to tell our friends we need to come back over here. This guy's giving away money. It's starting early.
It was interesting building a crowd, though. I learned a lot over the years. You know, the crowd and the way they were all standing up and in that area could make or break a show. As you know, you've done a ton of shows.
Yeah, I have.
If there was a baby stroller in the way, that would ruin it for, that would take up a big space.
Yeah.
So people didn't want to move up because they could see. Mm-hmm. So why should they move up? So I would say, folks, take a few steps in so the people behind you can move up. Mm-hmm. And then they would.
That's what I always say. So you don't block the aisle.
So they don't block the aisle. Yeah. And then they would turn around and see that there were people behind them. And then they go, oh, okay. Now I'll move up so those people can move up. So, that was...
Did you ever have any problem with nearby vendors who were upset because you were hogging all the clients?
Yeah, we played nicely with them.
You have to.
You don't turn your mic up too loudly.
Right.
And you'd be you want to be a good neighbor.
Yeah.
So I never had any problems with it.
Yeah.
But it was... It was a great time. And then it was just, I after that, I transitioned into, I didn't want to be gone as much, like you said. So then I started doing talks because I had worked at Disney when I was in college. I did their college program. And then I had done the auto shows and these other experiences I had done working with other magicians. And, I've always liked doing creative projects and coming up with ideas. So my other corporate clients would ask me, they said, can you talk to our employees about creativity and how to think differently? So that was when I put together a talk called How to Think Like Magicians.
Okay.
How to Think Like a Magician. And it was how to solve challenges that they thought were impossible so they could be more effective. So that's what I did. And then that allowed me to charge more. So I was doing talks that you could charge more for a talk than you could for a magic show.
Yes, that's true. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Today.
I mean, it was crazy. Like the amount that I was charging for a show, if I wanted to charge more, people say, we don't have that in our budget. But if you started there as a speaker, you must not be good because you weren't charging enough. It was a totally different mindset.
And you could add another zero onto that fee too.
Yeah. And I could charge that on a Wednesday afternoon when, they're not going to have a show then. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And then that allowed me to be home more.
And so, do you really find that speaking was your thing for a long time?
I loved it because it allowed me to do a lot of the different things I liked. It allowed me to share impossible objects and puzzles with people. It allowed me to talk a little bit about the technique of magic. It allowed me to tell the stories of magicians who have invented things that contributed to mainstream society.
Right. Did you ever do a TED Talk?
I did. I did a TEDx talk in Detroit.
That you can see pretty well.
Yeah, it went great. It went great. It was actually.
Is it online? Can I see it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's online.
Okay. I'll put a link on their website.
It was funny because I had this part wasn't funny, but I'd broken my wrist. I didn't tell anybody because it was one of those things where you don't want, I don't like to complain online on Facebook or anything, but I'd broken my wrist, shattered it, had to have three surgeries. Wow. So I didn't perform for a year. Mm-hmm. That TED Talk was my first time back on stage after breaking my wrist. And I'm opening up with like the bowling ball production, Kevin James's bowling ball production.
Jumped right into it. The heavy duty stuff, literally.
Doing a version of the talk that I hadn't done before. It was a shortened version. You're performing live for the audience there, but then the bigger audience was, watching online. So that's always a challenge of entertaining people there, but the bigger one is you want to make sure it's there.
The online audience.
Online things. It was fun. It worked out and it ended up getting me a lot of work. So it was good.
Speaking of Kevin James, there's another Michigan magician, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gene Anderson, another one.
Yes, true. I think he's as we start thinking about it, we'll start dropping in more
Nathan
names.
Nathan Cranzo, Rick Merrill.
Yeah.
There's tons of guys.
And they were from different parts, but there are some other magicians that you knew. Again, you knew Jason, but there were some other guys that you grew up with or knew. How'd you meet Jeff Hobson then? I mean, he's from Michigan. I mean, from Detroit area, but yeah. he's older than you. So
yeah.
You weren't in school together necessarily, but.
No. So Jeff is, Jeff's about 10 years older than I am.
But you knew him as a magician when you were younger?
Everybody in Detroit knew Jeff.
Okay.
Like, Jeff was, Jeff is Hobson. I mean,
he was doing comedy clubs back then, I guess, right?
He was doing comedy clubs. He had moved out to L.A. and was flying home to do shows. He did car shows for a while.
I forgot about that. He did. Yeah.
So he did that. And then he was in town. He would come into the magic shop, and he would buy 2 dozen... Cressy jumbo mouth
coils. Coils, yeah.
And then he would come back the next week and buy 2 more dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And this was during the holiday season, Christmas. Okay. I said, what are you doing with these? How many do you use in a show? He goes, just one. So then I figured out quickly, he was doing 24 shows in a week.
Yeah.
And he was that busy.
Wow.
And he was just so likable and just a great guy. So he was very kind. We went out to lunch one day. And this is still when I was really green and, you know, just starting out. And he gave me some, you know, really good pointers and just advice on magic.
And anything you remember that you can share?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember him saying, you know, here's magic 101. He said, you need to get the audience to care.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you need to break down that fourth wall and connect with them. By handing them something or, you know, going into the audience or doing something to break that wall of the stage, but then get them to care. Why do you want them, you know, why do they want to see this? What's the difference? And that was a really big lesson to me and something I think about now anytime I'm performing is why do they care about this?
Great advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you continued your relationship with him. And how did that app come about? Because I remember we were talking when I introduced you.
Oh, the joke app?
Saying about the joke app. That was back when we had iPods. Was it called iPods? Or what were they called?
iPod Touch.
iPod Touch. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going back. I think that was 2009 we came out with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you just kind of sitting around and joking and saying, we got to write these down?
Yeah. So the story about that was 2007, Hobson and Kalen and Ginger, Mark Kalen and Ginger and Jeff Hobson.
Oh, they were doing the Carnival of Wonders.
They were doing the Carnival of Wonders in Atlantic City.
I saw the show there.
And Jeff called me and said, would you want to help out with the show?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to think about it for a half a second.
I said, yes.
Yes. So I went there and I was, you know, just, I wasn't one of the feature performers. It was the three of them and I was helping. I was a box pusher and I was helping with the tiger and the panther and, you know.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah, literally. And doing all that stuff and bringing things on, different costumes. We were in rehearsals. That was when Joni Spina was working on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And got to meet her.
Was she backstage as a choreographer or was she actually a dancer?
She was a choreographer and a director of the show.
Okay. But was she on stage?
No.
Presence? Okay.
No. But wow, do I miss Joni?
Yeah, we all do.
She was brilliant.
And the kindest, sweetest person you'll meet.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
To people and to animals. I mean, she just had the kindest heart and so humble.
Mm-hmm.
She's accomplished so much in magic. And contributed so much to magic, I should say.
And she was coming to Houston frequently for her lung treatment and trying to get the lung replacement and everything, and ultimately passed there waiting for one. But she would go back and forth to Vegas, and I was visiting with her one time at lunch, and I was talking about my poster collection. She said, well, I bet I've got a bunch of them that you don't have, because I toured internationally with David Copperfield, and so I've got these with different languages and things. And she said, I'm not going to have any use for them. She said, are you interested? Wow. And I said, yeah. You know, just kind of, that's all we had, just a passing conversation. Matter of fact, I think I was taking her back to the airport to fly home. And she was in the back seat. My wife was sitting next to me. So anyhow, I just kind of passing. Next thing I know, when she had come back, she was staying at Daniel Summers' house, and Dan called and said, "Hey, Joni's was asking about you. She's got something for you. Why don't you come over and visit, and we'll have lunch and whatnot." And I did. And she had this big roll of posters that she remembered of all the things that she's going through with her health issues,
yeah,
and also trying to dispose of her house and other kinds of things that she remembered me and took the time and effort to actually physically bring these things to get. I mean, that's why they're even more of a treasure to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
but that's the
Joni.
Way she was.
That was Joni. Yeah. Amazing.
So it's neat.
So that was just another one of those. Wow, how fortunate am I to be working alongside Joni Spina?
So throughout your life, sounds like you pinch yourself. It's like, is this really me? Is this happening to me?
I don't take a day for granted.
Yeah.
And I am, I've been very fortunate to experience the things that I've done.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's because of the people that have been kind to me. It's all these magicians. So, yeah, so we did that show. So it opened up and it was Before Your Very Eyes. That was the original name of the show.
Okay.
And I remember after a couple of weeks of rehearsals, it opened, standing ovation first show and standing ovation every show after that.
Hmm.
The contract got extended. I think it was from a few months and then we went 7 months. So, Jeff and I would hang out backstage and then we were all staying in the hotel. That's where we were living in, it was Trump Marina, originally Trump Castle, and then they changed names while we were there. And we would tell jokes. And he said, you know a lot of jokes. And I said, well, you know a lot of jokes. So we started writing these jokes down, and that's what we would do. We would meet for breakfast or lunch and write down jokes.
Yeah.
And that became the joke app, best jokes ever.
So the joke app, to tell people what we're talking about, because this no longer exists.
Right.
But
I'll tell you why. Yeah.
It was a thing in which you could do a search. You could say dentist or golf, and there would be a half dozen or a dozen different jokes about this. So if you were a speaker and you were looking for a joke to tell your audience or to maybe insert, if you were working for a group as a magician or whatever, you could add these generic jokes, basically. They were really funny.
Yeah, and it was all categorized by clean, suggestive, or dirty.
Mm-hmm.
So green, yellow, red, you could filter out, you know, which ones you didn't want. And then it had sound effects built in. So after you told the joke, you could hit a rim shot, or you could hit laughing, or crickets. We had crickets, so you could do that. So that was funny. So, you could read these rapid fire and then just keep hitting the crickets, and that was even funnier. So, yeah, we had that app developed, and it was a guy out of Canada that did all the work, did an amazing job, and then he went on to do, like, the app for 7-Eleven and for Pepsi and another company, and then the whole Farmville thing back then, and then he just got too busy and couldn't update our app.
Yeah.
So, that's why it eventually went away, is it just became more glitchy every time there was an iOS update.
Right.
And
couldn't keep up with it.
We tried to find other people that could update the app, and they couldn't figure out how he did the coding for that. It was a really weird thing.
They'd have to start from scratch.
Right. And then we were going to have someone else do it, and then it was, you know, people said, oh, 99 cents for an app. Ugh, you know, people are used to free.
Yep.
And then it just gets knocked off. So the good news is that we recently printed it in a book.
Hmm.
It's now a printed book, and it's got a lot more jokes in it.
Do you sell it, or where is it available?
Yeah. So Hobson has his club, his comedy club, in La Quinta, California, Marvin's Magic Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff sells them there, and he's been selling a ton of them. He sells them after the shows. And then... yeah, we will be selling them. I don't know through what format or whatever, but anyone can get in touch with me or Hobson, and we'll get you a copy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps might be able to get a couple of copies as prizes.
You might be able to get one today, Scott.
How cool would
I have
that
a
be?
Feeling you'll
yeah. do it. So you and Jeff kind of, because of your busy lives, after you put that together, I guess, kind of went your own separate ways. And then at some point, how'd you come up with the napkins? And now the paper napkin, napkin to rose was not your idea for twisting.
No.
So how'd you come in?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I was with my mom in a restaurant, a waiter made of rose for my mom. Mm-hmm. I just thought that just made such an impression.
Sure.
You know, I think everything I did was to try to make my mom smile or laugh or...
That's neat.
Yeah. So that was a big moment for me. And then throughout the years, I had seen other magicians make them, and Brian Flora had his videotape teaching how to make napkin roses.
Right.
It was a really good video, VHS tape. And then Doc Eason would make them out of red napkins, and other people would make them out of red napkins. So I said... Well, why doesn't, I had it in my notebook of ideas of this red and green napkin. And I didn't do anything. And then I was reading through the notebook years later and I said, oh, you know, I should pursue this. So I started looking for a napkin manufacturer that could print, you know, the top of the napkin, one quarter of it was red and then the bottom three quarters were green.
Okay.
So when you twist it, it looks like a red rose with a green stem. And I went through probably, I don't know, there's 50 to 100 different napkin companies to see if
it was an easy thing then.
No, nobody could do it, or they didn't want to do it, or the minimum order was just prohibitive. So I dropped the idea. Year later, pick up the idea again. I said, I got to get this done. Call another 50 places. Finally found one company and they said, we can do it. The minimum order is 65,000 napkins.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, okay, can I get a sample? No. No sample. So you have to get these custom plates made and they print it and that's it. So, all right, I ordered 65,000 napkins, sight unseen. At the time, I was living in a condo.
It's a big thing to swallow.
Yeah.
Did you have to get a loan to do it?
No. Okay. Fortunately, I was doing the auto show, so it was okay.
It paid well.
Okay. Yeah, so this semi-truck, I remember my friend Keith came over and the semi-truck is backing up to my condo. And I'm thinking, this is either going to be really cool or I'm going to have red and green Christmas napkins for the rest of my life. And I debuted those napkins here at the get-together, at Abbott's get-together in Colon, in 2004.
All right.
At the Legion.
Okay.
And I'll share a picture with you. We were at the back table. David Lindsell took the pictures. Amazing photographer and friend, who another guy is no longer with us. And we were sitting at the table with Graham Putnam from Fun Incorporated and Jay Marshall.
Magic Inc.
Gene Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few other people there. And we were all made the roses and we're holding them up. I sold out of those 65,000 napkins in a few months.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Because there are packages of 24?
They were 50.
50, okay.
Yeah, and then I came out with the pink and then yellow, white, and purple.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, those have gone on, and I have
they're
a life
of the millions
own.
Now, you think?
Yeah, I never thought that they would make the memories that they have. Mm-hmm. You know, the Red Cross uses them when there's a disaster because it takes people's focus away from the trauma of what's
How
going
cool
on.
How cool is that?
Gets them to focus on something simple and do it. Pastors use them, doctors use them, nurses, because you can't do balloons all the time
right,
in hospitals.
And calm down patients and kids.
Yeah, so it's been a really good thing. And my mom's name was Rose.
How serendipitous.
Okay. She passed away back when I was 22. So she unfortunately never got to see the product. But I think that is, you know, just serendipitous and kind of cool that the best product I ever had was named Rose.
Once again, you're making your mom smile. Or by you right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was neat. So it was good.
Wow. And so that continues then still to this day that being sold, as you said.
Yeah, napkinrose.com.
Napkinrose.com.
Yeah, and you can go on YouTube and there's, you know, type in Michael Mode, Napkin Rose, and there's some videos.
Do a lot of dealers handle those? I mean, like through Murphy's or somebody, or do they just go through you?
They do. For a while, I couldn't get them, you know, during the pandemic. Couldn't get the supplies were closed. Yeah, people were closed. So I recently started making them again, and they are out there. So.
Okay.
You can get them.
At napkinrose.com, or was it?
Napkinrose.com.
Napkinrose.com, yeah.
Or through dealer. You know what? Buy them from your dealers because I am growing up and working in a magic shop.
Yeah.
I like to support brick and mortar magic shops.
Yeah.
That's one of my passions, so.
Let's keep them open.
Don't go to my site. Buy them from a local dealer.
And if they don't have them, tell them to order.
Yeah. Yeah, have them call me and I'll send them some. And yeah, I think there's a couple Facebook groups I'm admin on, and one of them is a magic shop photos and stories group, because that's another one of my passions. And Gabe Fahuri and I are going to be doing a book on magic shops with pictures and everything of this, you know, bygone era of these amazing shops, and then the ones that are still in existence that
it's
are
kind of like the Burma Shave signs or barn roofs that are painted. I mean, they've fallen down, they've gone by the wayside, and those are just memories. But before long, the brick and mortar, I think, are going to be memories, unfortunately, as well.
Yeah, I hope not. You know, my wife Lisa and I, we were just in Italy, and there's a great shop in Rome called Eclectica. And it's just this amazing, it's not far from the Spanish Steps, and it's just this beautiful shop. And you walk in there and you just have this feeling. And, you know, I saw tourists coming in and have that look on their eyes of, you know, stepping into a world of wonders.
Right. And going into some place in Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Diagon Alley.
Yeah.
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 Trying to say over there.
Yeah. Sounds good.
While we're here in Colon, then also, it's a land of an Amish country. And you had coordinated some things I mentioned early on with Darrell. What was the gentleman's name that is
Merle?
Merle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had made something for you because you constantly creative and different ideas, and he was able to make something. And tell me about that relationship and what the trick was.
Another cool story.
You got the stories.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, it's cool. I don't know, maybe people listening. But so there's a thing called a spider box, where it's a little wood box, unfinished, you know, it's just very simple thing. And when you pull
like a matchbox.
Yeah, you pull the lid back and this rubber spider or mouse jumps out and hits you in the back of the hand, the person doing it, and it just scares them. And it's more common now than it was 15, 20 years ago when we started with them in the Amish. So someone had one of these boxes. My friend Marvin Yagoda from Marvin's Marvelous Mechanical Museum had one. And I said, where did you get that? And he said, Shipshewana, Indiana, which is about a half an hour from Colon here. And it's this amazing little Amish town. It looks like it's from a Hallmark movie. You know, there's all-you-can-eat chicken restaurants and different things. And then there's this store, and it's like, I call it Amish Costco. And that's Merle's store. So we go in there, and it's all this food and everything. And they said, that's where we bought them. And I look, and I go, yeah, I don't see these toys. You know, this, they don't have any toys here. And then I found it. It was like this box in the middle of nowhere because they make them. And so I said, well, I'd like to buy a quantity of these. How can I get a hold? So they gave me the guy's name and address, and I wrote him a letter and didn't hear from him. So a year later, we go back to the store and I said, I'd like to call. So they gave me a phone number to call. So I call him and he answers, and he was at work, so they can have a phone at work. And he said, yeah, I have the boxes. And I said, well, I'd like to order. And can you send me a dozen of them? He said, sure. I said, well, how do I pay you? You know, I didn't know credit card, Amish. Yeah. I don't know if that, how that worked.
Not really. Yeah.
He said, well, let me send them. And then when you get them, just mail me a check.
Okay.
I'd never met him. And
yeah.
I said, are you sure? And he said, well, that's the way we do business. You know, trust. And I said, wow. You know, so sent him a check, got the boxes, and you know,
that's why they only have one set of clothes, because they can't afford the others, because they've been ripped off so many times by cheats. Can't afford a razor either.
I went to an Amish hotel the other day and they said it's only $25 for the night. I said, wow. And he says, well, you got to make your own bed. And I said, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
He gave me a hammer and some wood. So, yeah, so we became good friends with the Amish, and all because of that spider box. And I've given out probably 500 of those over the years. And they actually had someone drive them up to Detroit for our wedding when Lisa and I got married. And yeah, they're just, I say visiting the Amish is like the opposite of watching the news.
You know, how so?
Well, it gives you hope that humanity is still sane, and you know, it's not the craziness of the news. Everything is, and you've been to the Amish dinners, which started with my mother. We would go down there for dinner. And then years later, when I met Merle, he said, why don't you come over after dinner? And we would, start doing a couple tricks for them in their driveway, you know, and there's the Amish buggy and everything in the cornfield. And then it just grew and grew, and people heard about it. Can we go? So I think the biggest one we had was like 80 people.
I probably was there.
Yeah. And the show was, you know, we've had Gene Anderson doing the newspaper tear with cornfields in the background.
We just kind of entertain on their porch, and the kids all sat on the chairs out there.
Yeah.
On the swings and stuff.
We've had Hobson perform there.
Yeah.
Doing the egg bag for the Amish and killed.
Yeah.
And the great thing is they have no idea who any of these entertainers are.
And it means nothing to them.
Right. It's like a genuine, you know, okay, you're either good or you're not. And they're so appreciative of all the magic, and they haven't seen it on TV, so it's great.
And so, yeah, in payment, then we get the meal, and they give us buggy rides around the around the community and everything then too. So
yeah, they bring out some ice cream and
yeah,
pies and cookies.
It's just, they're the most wonderful people. I just really love them.
Yeah.
They've done a lot. So you maintain your relationship then with him for a long time. That's another thing. And here, I've never seen it, but I've heard they've got a Amish Uber.
Yeah, that was... That was here in Colon. It was controversial years ago, but yeah, someone took a buggy, Amish buggy, and they put an Uber sign on it, and he was giving rides to the Legion and different places in towns.
And so people might think, well, how do you get hold of them? Well, they do have phones, and so you can call and talk. I mean, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
They're not so out of date.
Right.
By any means.
And you see the Amish buggies with the horses backing a boat into the water so they can go fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little gas-powered motor.
Well, another one we have completely overlooked and haven't talked about that is instrumental in your life and mine in many ways, and a Michigan magician, is Al the Only.
Oh, sure.
How can we not talk about Al?
Yeah, so Al. Wow. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about with Al.
Yeah,
I think we were
saying
last night.
Trade shows for car shows and things. Mm-hmm. I guess there in Detroit for a long time.
Yeah,
then too, and he's older than you, so you probably knew him as a senior statesman at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you first meet him?
So last night we were saying, what is it? The 6 degrees of Al the Only, right?
Yeah,
all these different things.
Yeah.
When I was a kid and I was just getting into magic, my uncle was one of the ushers at a Catholic church in Hamtramck, Michigan, which is where Al is from.
And Hamtramck, by the way, is just it's the Polish subdivision, I think, basically, of Detroit, right?
Yeah. It's like this Polish island in the middle of Detroit. It's surrounded by Detroit, totally. And so that's where my mom's side of the family, you know, originated, and Al's from. So my uncle... He said, there's one of the priests at the church who, and Al's brother's a priest. He said, his brother's a magician. I'll see if he can call you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm at home one day and I get this call out of the blue from Al the Only. My mom says, Al the Only's on the phone. I'm nervous. I'm like, who, Al the Only? So I'm talking to a real magician.
Yeah.
This is him. And gave me some great advice. And then later on we met and he gave me my first restaurant gig,
mm-hmm.
you know, and had the confidence in me to do that.
He was working that chain of, what was it called? Molly and
Carlos Murphy's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
He gave a lot of magicians a break and gave them a lot of work over the years. So
yeah,
I did that for Al for years, but yeah, then we became friends and he was the one who introduced me to Jerry Costello, mm-hmm. who, you know, lives here in Colon part of the year and down in Florida.
He's a dentist in Florida. I think he's retired finally.
Yeah, a retired anesthesiologist.
Oh, that's what he
lives here.
Yeah.
Jerry says the get together one year was one of the most expensive magic conventions he's ever been to because he bought a house.
Bought a house, yeah.
but yeah, that. And then Al, also, when I was starting out in magic, I have two older brothers and an older sister. And my older brother had this magic kit, pieces were missing, and, you know, the classic story of instructions were gone. I came up with my own way of doing it. And with that, he also had a set of TV magic cards,
mm-hmm.
and Marshall Brodeen, and it was the two of clubs. And years ago, Al took me to Marshall's house outside of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I brought that deck of cards and I have it signed. And it's one of my prized possessions in my collection of a photo with Marshall and that deck and Al.
Wow.
But Al's always been great like that, introducing me to different people and introduced me to Ken Klosterman, brought me there. And that started a, you know, great friendship with Ken that I continued.
Did you ever spend the night at Ken's house?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A few times.
Yep. You stay upstairs on that big bed?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought this smelled like Michael Mode.
No. That's funny. It smells like Abbott's Flowers.
Yeah, Abbott's Flowers.
Yeah, so it's a great group here. Al's celebrating his, what is it, 50 or 51st get together in a row,
mm-hmm.
with Bibbick.
Yep. That's right. I didn't see Bibbick last night at the party, by the way, but I guess he's definitely going to be here. He's probably working at the lounge right now, Chicago Magic Lounge.
He's probably getting his hair done.
Yeah. So, a little funny story that last year at the C-Box party, I had done a podcast episode with him some time ago, and we were talking about this little martini glass that he uses as a gag.
Yeah.
And it is glass. It's not plastic or whatever. It's just a miniature size, basically, about 4 inches tall or something. And I said, man, if you ever run across one of those, I'd love one. Well, he had one, and he said, hey, I've got something for you. So we went out to the car and opened up the trunk, and he had a box, and opened this little thing. And I said, oh my gosh, thanks. He said, yeah, you said you want one. I happened to be at a garage sale and they had one. And I said, this is great. Well, I was holding my drink then also, and I was closing the box, and I was going around then because my car was parked right in front of his.
Yeah.
I hadn't gone 10 feet and I fumbled the box and dropped it. You could hear it go, tsh.
Oh no.
And that's exactly what I thought. Oh my gosh. And I had the worst look on my face. He fell to his knees laughing. He thought that was the funniest thing. It's like, oh, this is great. Thanks. And then I toss it or break it. It's like, this means nothing. It's like, oh, I felt so bad. But he thought it was the funniest thing he's ever seen. I'm sure he still tells that story.
Oh, he's a funny guy.
He is. He does a great job over at the Magic Lounge. I was talking with somebody. Yeah, Chicago Magic Lounge. Recently, someone was saying about how that people, Benjamin Barnes was telling me about how there are some people who have never gone in to see a show at the Magic Lounge, Chicago Magic Lounge. They would just go to the bar, hang out, watch Jeff, have fun, have a few drinks after work, and then go home.
Yeah.
He's just that good. They go to see him. And he's been doing restaurants for a long number of years in the Chicago area and just found his niche as a bar magician. And he's just a very funny guy.
He's a natural and, yeah, very funny guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you ever work behind bars? I mean, after restaurants, I mean, did you ever work that kind of a...
So, yeah, actually, my first stint, before I did the restaurants, like, full-time, when I was 13 years old, I wanted to get a job at the grocery store so I could make money to, you know, buy magic at Romig's in the magic shop. And I was too young. They wouldn't hire me at the grocery store. So I got a job behind the bar doing magic. And my brother was the cook at the restaurant. And it was called Villa Calabria. This was way back. And they're closed now. I think it was child labor laws or something. I don't know. Every Wednesday I'd go there and I'd get, it was $40 and it was 2 hours and I got a dinner. And it was across the street from GM Tech Center, General Motors. So it would be a lot of regulars that would come in for their cocktail lunches and not, you know, still be there for dinner. So that was baptism by fire. I learned a lot behind the bar. I'd go home every week, learn new magic, and then come back, which I know isn't the best way to do it, but they were the same people.
Something new. You can't just keep doing the same trick every week.
It was great. Between that and working at the magic shop, I really cut my teeth doing that.
Wow.
And learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, that's a good place to kind of start to wrap up as far as giving some advice to others. I assume when you were in college, what did you major in?
Marketing.
Marketing. It's important, I think, then, if you're going to be a magician, that you have business sense.
Everything is marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all comes down to that. So what would be your recommendation, or rather, what is your philosophy? What is your magic word?
Oh, well, that's...
About that time.
Is that two questions or one?
Yeah. Well, let's say wrap it up into one question from the standpoint of how do you live? What's important to you?
Well, I think my recommendation to magicians, real quick, is to... A couple things. Be conversational, be invitational. That's what my mentor, Ron Aldrich, instilled in me. I think read Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it's not the best title of a book. Sounds a little off-putting, but there's some gold in there. And there's a story about Thurston in there, Howard Thurston,
really?
Which is incredible, about how, you know, he treated his audiences and how he prepared his mindset for going off on stage to do a show. And very important, very important. So that, and then do as many shows as you can and in as many situations as you can, and that'll help you become better. And slow down. I think most magicians perform way too fast.
That's my biggest problem. That's the one thing I hear most often, you go too fast.
Yeah.
And I just need to pause. And those pauses are the most important.
Yeah, they're the music notes, right? You can't just keep hitting the keys. You got to have the music notes. And I think, it's a confidence thing, but I think a lot of magicians will keep talking over the magic effect and they don't stop to let people appreciate what just happened.
Yeah.
There's that. And then, but you asked about the magic word too.
Yeah, so what is your magic word? So the magic word meaning what's your philosophy of life when you wake up, what drives you each day?
Well, when I wake up, the dogs drive me.
That's crazy.
The first thing. We love our dog. But the magic word, I think it would have to be a saying I've kind of become known for. Al kind of promotes it too, but you never know when you're making a memory.
Love that.
You never know when you're making a memory. And that could be something good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I think about when I'm performing in all types of situations. But when I was doing auto shows and there'd be two people that showed up to a show, it wasn't always 150. You know, you're in Kansas City on a Monday, there aren't going to be 150 people at that booth. You might have two or four people, but you don't know who those people are. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what they're going through. So give them 100%. Perform like there were 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it was those connections that I made with people where they would really appreciate that. And I think that's important.
That is good. I really love that. That reminds me last night when I was talking with Lori, Al's wife, who was saying about how she enjoyed a particular podcast I did with Terry Evanswood and a story that he had related along that same line, where that a lady had come to him and said that she had gone to the beauty salon to get her hair fixed and nails and everything, and she was going to commit suicide.
Yeah.
She was depressed, apparently, and she saw his show, and it gave her hope.
Wow.
And so she decided, no, I want life rather than death.
Wow.
And decided to choose life. So you don't know who's in the audience, what you're saying, and how you can affect someone with what you do.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? Terry Evanswood was here last year, and I went up to him at the Legion, and I said, you made a memory for me. Years ago, I remember you performing here at Abbott's, and he had his Evanswood, you know, light-up backdrop, that uh-huh. whatever it is, six-foot-tall Evanswood.
Yeah.
It's probably 3 feet, but I remember it as six,
because I was huge, younger
then. And doing his card manip to Starry Night by Don McLean.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him do that there in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah, beautiful routine, but it's just one of those many memories that just
mm-hmm.
I look back on and smile.
That was a good memory.
Yeah, great memory. So many good ones.
This is a good memory I'm going to keep also, and I'm glad that we were able to record this so we can cherish this and others can enjoy this in the future then as well. Mike, it's always good catching up with you.
Yeah, Scott, thank you.
Love you, man. This has just been fun and endearing and good advice and good info, I think, that people can learn more about you. Some people who didn't know you kind of behind the scenes on certain things, but now perhaps they've made a new friend then too. So,
well, I love you too, Scott. And thank you for recording all these. And yeah, I listen to these on the way to work now and they're great. And it's wonderful because it kind of provides this atmosphere all year. You know, you can listen to these conversations with different magicians and you're really doing something for, you know, historical sake of magic where these conversations are gold. You know, there's a lot of, this one isn't, but there's a lot,
take the silver,
a lot of wisdoms in the other one. So
in the Olympics of magic, this may be a bronze. Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, yeah, the Olympics are on this week. Sure.
Well, this is definitely a medal winner.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. You're too kind. And again, thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're welcome.
This is just the start of Magic Week. We're going to have a lot more laughs and
we are.
Make a lot more memories this week. So thank you.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Michael Mode. This is Scotty App.
Thank you very much, Michael, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. And thank you, listeners, for caring enough to tune in and listen to this because, again, it may not have been someone who you are too familiar with, but now you have a new friend. So I hope whenever you get a chance to see Michael, you go up to him and tell him how much you enjoyed getting to know him here on this week's podcast. I also want to thank Michael for offering these really great prizes. To be specific, if you'll go to this week's episode of the Magic Word Podcast, there you will see an entry form, and if you'll just put in your name and email address, I will randomly select a name within a couple of weeks and announce the winner's names, and then I'll notify Michael, and then he will send those to you directly. This contest is open to residents of the United States because Michael will be shipping this out of his kindness of his heart. So he's going to be paying for the shipping, and rather than paying for foreign shipping, because it gets to be kind of expensive, they'll want to limit this just to those who are residing within the U.S. And the prizes, well, what are they? Okay, I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast where he is the one who had created these napkins with, and he talked about that in this week's podcast. And so he's got different colors, in which he has red,
pink, yellow, purple, and white. So you can have a choice of any of those colors, and there, he's going to offer three packages to two prizes, actually, three packages in each of the prizes. So a total of six he'll be awarding. So two winners will get three packages. And just notify me whenever that you win what colors that you would like. And the other one is going to get a copy of his book, Best Jokes Ever. I say his book, his and Jeff's. So again, go to themagicwordpodcast.com. It will be on the blog where you can enter your information and we'll see if your name happens to get drawn. So all I can say is good luck. It'll be three winners whose names will be selected. I want to remind everybody that next week is going to be the starting of Magic Texas, which is going to be an epic convention in Arlington, Texas, which is near Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. It's being sponsored by the local Dallas Magic Club and local assembly number 13, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a combination not only with Texas Association of Magicians, but also the Society of American Magicians. So it's going to be a joint convention and FISM, as well as the North American Championships of Magic. So this will be the pathway for people to compete in FISM next year in Turin, Italy by winning the competition here. So this should be a lot of fun. The night before on Thursday is going to be Lance Burton and Friends, which is an extra ticketed event. But I'll be coming in a little bit early for that. And there are so many different things happening with Gay Blackstone being the guest of honor. I know Nani Darnell is coming in with Greg Wilson. He's got a lot of things planned. The kinds of things that Magic Texas has planned is just going to be epic. Trust me, it's going to be a great convention. If you miss it, you'll hear people talking about it later and you'll regret not attending here this year. It's a once-in-a-lifetime, not-to-be-repeated event. Anyhow, that's at magictexas.com. And I'll be giving daily reports from that convention. So if for some reason that you can't make it, the next best thing is to hear the reports. So next week will be the beginning of the daily reports that will be coming from Arlington, Texas. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, you never know when you're making a memory. So give it 100% of your best effort. This is Scotty out.